number two. Today we've just passed halftime. We've got another hour this evening, and then we'll have Georgia baseball as the Dogs host. They're at Georgia Southern for a three-game weekend series. So without delay, we'll jump right into today's 5 at 5, brought to you as always by Duplicating Systems. More than a system, a solution. And Tyler, you may fire when ready.
So every offseason in the world of college football, there's always a handful of group of five coaches that get snatched up by some Power 5 teams. And obviously, like this offseason, you had coaches like Jeff Collins going to Georgia Tech from Temple and everything. Who is the next hotshot group of five coach that's going to land a big gig possibly in the next year or so?
Well, it's easy. It's Lance Kiffin, right?
Lane Kiffin?
Yeah.
Yeah.
A.K.A. Lance.
And Joey Freshwater.
Joey Freshwater, who's coming to Athens next month. Or this month now. It's March. Hey, today's March. How about that?
Yeah, to the coaching clinic or whatever.
Yeah. Yeah, Lance is the next hot group of five. The outside of him, the guy that I really liked was Neil Brown. I didn't know why he was at Troy for as long as he was. They lost it at Clemson a couple of years ago by a touchdown. They won at LSU, and finally West Virginia got him after Dana
Holgorsen
left for Houston.
Down to the group of five.
He went down to the group. So maybe he's the next hot group of five coach.
Well, I mean, can you really count those guys, though, considering that they've already been head coaches at Power 5 institutions?
No, I won't. Oh, I won't count Kiffin, so, and like, I won't count. I'm kidding anyway with Kiffin.
Yeah, who's somebody that's like
what about
not
Josh Heupel?
Established? Okay.
Another Central Florida guy?
Yeah. If they keep doing what they're doing and don't fall off the face of the earth this season.
Yeah, because you had, let's see, the Satterfield at App State got a job. Where did he go? He went to, he got one of the ACC jobs, right?
Yes.
No, he went to he went to Louisville.
Went to Louisville because they couldn't land Jeff Brohm.
Yeah, and I like that too. Brohm stayed at Purdue.
Yeah.
You know, Purdue got a good coach. Why can't they have a good coach?
That's true.
How come the second those schools get good coaches, they just get poached?
Yeah, it's true. But so you think Heupel, is he the top of your list?
Yeah, coming off an undefeated season.
LSU ended up controlling the game in the end, but you go to the Fiesta Bowl without your starting quarterback and put up a pretty good fight. Something to be said for that.
Yeah. So I would think, I would probably say Heupel would be the leader in the clubhouse now. Because even like if you think, Charlie Strong is at South Florida, so he wouldn't.
But he's already also been at the top level.
Yeah.
So
he wouldn't count for that. He wouldn't count for that either. Neil Brown was my answer. Scott Satterfield would have been the answer. So you actually have to identify now, I think, a whole new crop because a lot of those guys ended up getting coaches. Would you count, Brian Harsin at Boise?
Sure.
So all those Boise coaches seem to eventually find their way to some bigger job.
So we'll stick with Josh Heupel. What job is going to open up that he's going to take? Which Power 5 coach gets the boot?
Oh my gosh! What about Willie Taggart?
I say Willie Taggart.
Of the coaches that just got hired last year, Taggart has to be. They haven't signed a quarterback in the last two recruiting classes.
Nope.
And he's like, I've got a plan. And now DeAndre Francois, they had to kick him off the team.
Mm-hmm.
I could see him making the move just up the interstate there in Florida.
Yeah, be an easy transition.
Going to Tallahassee. The SEC looks pretty stable right now, but it's the SEC, so it's never stable. Chad Morris will be interesting at Arkansas if they really don't get at least a little bit better this year, and they were terrible last year. Would they cut him just after 2 years?
Well, unless they're going to get somebody like Josh Heupel, I don't know who else you'd be bringing in.
Yeah, but I just – that's like – it's just a tough job now when with the SEC West, and if you're going to Arkansas, and you're stuck in this division with Alabama. I mean, really, like where are you going?
Right. I feel like Vanderbilt likes Derek Mason. I don't think they're going to be sending him walking anytime soon.
No, and I mean, coming off of the year Mark Stoops just had, you know, he's not going to – he's bought himself some time there. I Will Muschamp, I think if South Carolina doesn't have a decent season this year, then he's going to – entering what would be 2020,
mm-hmm.
I think then maybe the heat is up on him. With Auburn and Gus Malzahn, that's just a that relationship is up and down. The first time they lose a game, he's on the hot seat. But I mean, if there was one, if there was one that came open, that might be the answer that I had would be Auburn. But I wouldn't see Josh Heupel being a guy there.
What if Virginia Tech has another bad season?
Yeah, because last year was with Justin Fuente went. I mean, that went really sideways for them.
Lost to Old Dominion.
They lost to Old Dominion. Gave up 500 yards to Old Dominion. That was like a. It was a deal too, where that wasn't even a fluky loss.
No, they got beat soundly.
Yeah. I thought he'd make a change with Bud Foster.
Yeah.
At the
very
minimum.
Least.
But everyone else in the ACC, because.
Yeah, I think everybody else is pretty solid with their jobs outside of maybe Taggart.
You know, the Pac-12 is with Clay Helton. If there's not a turnaround there, I'm surprised they kept him anyway.
Well, that's going to be Urban Meyer's job when that opens
up. He's not going there. I'm telling you where Urban Meyer's going to go. He's going to go to Notre Dame.
You think so? Well,
yeah.
How long did they hang on to Brian Kelly?
Well, I don't know, but it's when you think about how long Brian Kelly's been there already. In this day and age, coaches just don't stay at one place forever. Like,
right.
How many more years do you think he's going to be? Like, I see 2-3 years tops.
And the fact that they've gotten embarrassed both the times they've been in contention for the national championship.
That, they got blown out by Ohio State in that Fiesta Bowl. So they've shown, like, over time, that they'll have these great seasons every now and then, but they get to that ultimate game, and they prove that they're really not on that elite level.
Some more coaches on the hot seat than we initially thought.
Yeah, but so Kelly's been at Notre Dame since 2010. So you're going on
right.
a decade.
Yeah,
and just that's in this day and age, that's a long time for a coach at one school. So how many years do you think Brian Kelly's going to coach at Notre Dame?
I wouldn't say more than 2 or 3 because that's about the average of when they have those good seasons: 2012, 2015, and then 2018, and again they've all ended up in being embarrassed. The last time you see them.
Yeah, and I mean, they're going to get spanked by Georgia this fall.
Oh, yeah, well, without a doubt.
So they're going to come here, and they're going to have a humiliating defeat in September.
I will say, is that going to be another coach that Kirby Smart pushes out the door?
He might, and then that's Urban Meyer. He would take that job.
I wouldn't be surprised by that. He doesn't think he's going to coach again, but
I think that's the
– Notre Dame's attractive enough. And isn't he Catholic, too?
He's named after a pope.
Yeah, there you go.
Yeah, I mean, he has called that in the past, like his dream job.
Yeah,
I could see him not coaching anywhere again, except Notre Dame.
Except Notre Dame.
And when you start to think about how long Brian Kelly's been there, and the lifespan now of coaches at one school, you know, Kelly's got to be coming up on. How many more years do you realistically see him being in South Bend?
Yeah.
That it would be a short period of time.
And even if they were to make another run to the playoff next year or something, if they get bounced out in the semifinal without putting much of a fight, could be gone then.
Yeah. Well, I mean, they're gonna meet their match here in Athens, so the next time they run into one of the premier programs and they get just throttled again like they did by Clemson.
It's true. All right, moving on. Yesterday we were talking about LeBron James, and I brought up the fact that they're going to make a Space Jam 2 with him in it. It got me thinking about sports movies and what inaccuracy in a sports movie frustrates you the most. Because, you know, obviously sports movies bring in the Hollywood aspect, so not everything that happens in them is realistic in a sports setting. So what's something that's happened in a sports movie that couldn't really happen that kind of frustrates you?
Wow, that's a good...
It's a little bit of a thinker.
Well, I could... A lot of, like, those football movies, like, the tackling is outrageous.
Yeah.
I like Friday Night Lights, the TV show.
Yeah.
And, I mean, the movie was all right, too. But when you see, like, the... the action scenes and the way they tackle is like that's
yeah that's not
it's
real.
Not realistic. And like thinking back to Any Given Sunday,
mm-hmm.
excuse me, I think it would be like the tackling in football movies.
Yeah, okay, makes sense.
You know, the Natural was a great movie. Some people prefer the ending in the movie more than the book. You know, in the book he strikes out.
Right.
In the movie he shatters the lights or whatever. But that's not so much an inaccuracy as opposed to just Hollywood wanting to...
Yeah, got to give everybody a good ending.
Hollywood up the ending more than it was done in the book. But I think it would be any... Most of those football movies, when you look at how they do the tackling, and it's like guys are clotheslining each other,
yeah.
and they're flipping, you know, they're doing somersaults and things like that. That probably drives me crazy more than anything. There, you know, there hasn't really been a great basketball movie.
Hoosiers was good.
Well, yeah, Hoosiers was good. I liked White Men Can't Jump. Actually, I take that back. It's more like, I guess they're having, what's the best football movie?
The best football movie. I mean, I'm partial to Rudy.
Yeah.
But, I mean, you know, that's more of the story off the field than it is. You know, it's more just about him than the actual football being played itself.
Right.
The Replacements is pretty good. I mean, sure, there's plenty of Hollywood elements to that, too.
Of course, there was always the last Boy Scout that started with the running back running downfield and shooting someone.
That's true.
Took the gun out.
Yeah.
That wasn't realistic.
No, then you have the Longest Yard, which is not realistic in any sense.
Yeah.
But for comedic purposes, the thing that frustrates me the most in Talladega Nights, so you know when they shake and bake?
Yes.
And he shifts.
Uh-huh.
They're giving off the impression that you race in third gear, which is absolutely ridiculous because you can't be at top speed in third gear,
mm-hmm.
especially at a big track like Talladega.
Right.
So I get the aesthetic that shifting looks really cool, but when you think about it, it's kind of dumb.
You're not, I mean, they're not shifting at all.
No, they're not shifting at all. You race in fourth gear.
Yeah.
So to slingshot past somebody, you're not going to do any shifting whatsoever. But I get it. It looks cool in the movie that, you know, shake and bake and shifts, but it's not realistic at all.
Well, what about at the end when Will Ferrell and Sacha Baron Cohen run across the finish line?
Now, a driver has run across the finish line before.
Is that? But that doesn't, in the movie, that didn't count.
It didn't count.
You have to... It drive across
yes,
it.
Yes, you have to drive across it because your car has a sensor in it that scores you every time you go past the start-finish line. Carl Edwards flipped into the fence at Talladega in the spring of 2009, and his car ended up about 100 yards from the finish line, so he got out and ran across.
Mm.
Now, that was more for the fun of it than anything else. Of course, it didn't count,
yeah.
but it has happened.
Well, the thing about in the movie, all of a sudden there were no other cars on the track, though.
Yeah.
I'm thinking, like, when Carl Edwards did, I have no idea that he did that, but there were other cars racing, weren't there?
Yeah, it was coming to the end of the race, to the checkered flag.
That doesn't seem like the smartest thing to do.
Well, I mean, all the cars had already gone past, and he'd get, you know, everybody was going back to pit road, and he just got out of his car.
Oh, okay,
yeah,
all
the,
right.
The safety crew is there. They're going to take him to the infield care center, and he just wanted to run across
the
finish line.
He wanted to finish, say, I finished
the
race.
For the heck of it. And, you know, it got a laugh out of the crowd and everything. So that has happened.
Okay, all right.
Okay.
But that was more of just like, I'm going to finish the race.
Yeah, that kind of thing. Because he was, you know, he was leading the race when he got wrecked, and he ended up 100 feet from the finish line. May as well, for the heck of it. Okay, so... before I ask this question, what is your extent of an athletic career personally? Like, what have
I played Little League baseball, and I played, like rec league basketball, and I played intramural basketball when I was in college.
Okay, so what are your best or worst moments as an athlete?
Well, I could say my best is easy. I used to play. I played intramurals when I was at Miami, and I played against Ray Lewis.
Really?
Yeah.
That's amazing.
And I drained a three right over him, and he didn't like that.
That's nice.
Yeah. That's the highlight of my...
Kind of makes you think with what happened in 2000, like, man, I shouldn't have aggravated that guy.
Yeah. I mean, they ended up... It was him, and there was another player. I remember it was Marlon Barnes, who ended up getting murdered down there. And then there was a... He had to be like an offensive or a defensive lineman. I don't know who he was,
uh-huh.
but it was... He recorded 99% of the rebounds.
Oh, wow.
In that game. Like, there was no rebounding because he just basically stood down there, and if there was a missed shot, he got it.
I can't imagine that. Because who was the head coach at that time?
That would have been It was Dennis Erickson was still there.
I can't imagine Erickson would have been too thrilled if he knew his guys were out there playing intramural basketball.
Or getting threes ripped in
getting beat in intramural basketball.
Well, we didn't beat them, but I did.
Getting showed up, at least.
Yeah. I did have a few. I had a few highlights against them.
You drained a three against an NFL Hall of Famer.
I did.
I would bring that up a lot.
And
it was
often. Like it was three on three, uh-huh. And he was the man. I was guarding him. He was guarding me. It was like we were on each other.
I would bring that up a lot more often if I were you.
I've brought it up before. I started to back off though when it was pointed out that he was kind of like he was giving me like some really.
He's getting mad.
Yeah, he didn't look like he was too happy with me.
Yeah, and hindsight's 20/20.
Yeah,
like letting him. Let him not be mad. It's probably a good thing.
Like I wasn't going to take a charge or anything like that, but...
And drive an elbow into him or something.
Yeah.
Yeah, not going to happen.
So that's one of the...
Probably wouldn't go over well.
Yeah, that's one of the biggies.
That's quite an accomplishment.
Just balling against Ray Lewis.
Is that on your resume? It should be.
I should put it on there, yeah. Like you said, he is a Hall of Famer.
Exactly. All right, so I'm a big wrestling fan. Obviously, you're a big wrestling fan. And I appreciate, you know, the... legends that have come before the guys now. If you had to put together a list, and in no in particular order, just a list of five guys, the best promo cutters of all time, who's on your list?
Ric Flair.
Of course.
Very underrated because he was in Ric Flair's era, but Arn Anderson was a great promo cutter.
Okay.
The Rock was a great promo cutter.
Yes.
Stone Cold was a great promo cutter. Those would be, you had said five?
Yeah, that's four.
Ooh, wow. Roddy Piper was great. The Ultimate Warrior was... I was thinking about the Ultimate
Warrior.
He
just yelled.
He just yelled.
Made noises.
Macho Man was really good, too.
Yeah. How about Jake the Snake?
Jake the Snake,
His were very different.
Went dark,
they
too.
They were psychological. He didn't scream at you. He made you think.
No, he had that. He had Damien in that sack.
I love how in that the Resurrection documentary, they really went into detail about that, about how good he was at those promos.
Yeah. No, that's a good call there, too. Jake the Snake. Let me see. Who am I going to bump out? Well, who was my fifth? Roddy Piper was really good though, but then he would go a little crazy though.
That was his thing.
But he was good. Maybe I'd bump out Stone Cold.
Okay.
And put Jake the Snake in.
Okay, throwing in somebody from a newer era.
I got to put The Rock's got to be in there.
Yeah, I agree with all the guys in your list. I would also throw Paul Heyman in there. Obviously, he's
right.
around now, but...
He's been around forever, though.
Yeah,
I know who he is.
He can cut a scathing promo. And, they haven't matched up with Brock Lesnar now because Lesnar is horrific on a microphone. So they don't let him talk, and Heyman does all the talking for him and does a fantastic job at it.
Well, doesn't he do... What is it called? Is it kayfabe when they sort of break?
Yeah.
And they... He does that a lot, doesn't he?
Right, because Lesnar's obviously a champion from the UFC. He still fights in the UFC on occasion, despite the fact that he's the Universal Champion. So Heyman does a really good job kind of like blurring that line between sports and sports entertainment. And, you know, you could, honestly, I'm sure there's a compilation out there of just nothing but Heyman promos for hours that you could watch and be entertained the whole time.
Yeah.
Because he's just so good at it. I think, and CM Punk was pretty good at it, too.
He was one that would break a lot, too, and, like, air dirty laundry from behind the scenes.
Right. He had his famous pipe bomb in 2011 that just set the world on fire. Like, oh, my God, was that real? Was that fake? You know, got a lot of buzz from that one.
I'm aware of him, too. Not as familiar. I haven't seen. But I can tell you, the two guys I'll go on YouTube and I will watch are Arn Anderson and Ric Flair. Arn Anderson, because he was – attached to Flair and the Four Horsemen, and Flair was the king, but I think that's where AA ends up underrated.
Yeah. Anything between like Flair and the Four Horsemen and the Dusty Rhodes rivalry, just promos back and forth from that, amazing.
Yeah. Now that was the golden era.
Yeah, I was watching the Hard Times promo the other day from Dusty Rhodes for the heck of it.
Yeah.
Fantastic.
But Jake the Snake's a good call. He had a different style.
Yeah, just
and sometimes it would turn dark.
It made you check under your bed twice before you went to bed.
Yeah.
That kind of thing. All right, rounding out the 5 at 5, this is kind of a half sports, half anything else. Who has some of the greatest mustaches of all time?
Well, Tom Selleck.
Tom Selleck.
Yeah, Tom Selleck is definitely up there. I mean, nowadays, like, some people will just grow a stash just for the sake of looking kind of throwback.
Right.
But Selleck's is definitely...
Selleck's is legendary.
As legendary as it gets. Burt Reynolds had a good stash.
Had a good stash.
Occasionally.
I think Dale Earnhardt had a pretty good stash.
Yeah, Dale Earnhardt did have a good stash. That's
that,
a good
he
call.
That, he had that push broom mustache.
Yeah. Well, there were Raleigh Fingers.
Yeah.
You can't forget about Raleigh Fingers with his stash. Thinking about the... Anyone in basketball?
I know Brad Daugherty had the little pencil mustache.
Yeah.
That's kind of funny.
I don't think those are... Those don't even look good.
They're just kind of funny.
I don't mind like a big, good, cheesy stash.
Yeah.
Baseball players nowadays, even nowadays, I mean, they come up with the best facial hair.
Aaron Rodgers had a pretty interesting stash for a while there.
Yeah, he did, because he had like the big, just thick,
yeah.
thick
went
mustache.
Full force with it, and there's the picture of him wearing the cowboy garb, which is hilarious.
Yeah. I mean, you can see the guys that are super popular, you'll see plenty of times out of their uniform, but it's tough on game day because they're all wearing helmets and stuff. Baseball players, you can see easy.
I'll throw one out there. We were talking about wrestling a moment ago. Dan Severn is a guy that wrestled in the 90s. He was an actual, like, he was a combat fighter before he got to the WWE, but man, that guy had an amazing mustache.
He had a good mustache. I don't really remember him.
If you Google Dan Severn, you'll see exactly what I'm talking about. It's pretty awesome.
How do you spell his last name?
Severn.
Oh, there he is.
Yeah, that's a hard to beat mustache right there.
Yeah, that's a good stash.
He came in with like Ken Shamrock.
Yeah,
they were both like MMA guys before MMA got the popularity that it has now.
Right.
But he looks like a guy that could legitimately hurt you.
It's tough, though. With Tom Selleck, has he ever not had that stash? Has he ever been?
Not that I know of.
Yeah.
Because, obviously, he's Magnum P.I. He was on Friends for a while. He had the mustache, too.
Now he's on Blue Bloods.
Still has it. Yeah, it's just, I wouldn't know. I wouldn't recognize him without it, to be honest.
No, I know. I think he's probably figured, like, no, this is my signature. I've got to stick with it. Yeah.
Trademark.
All right, there you go. That's today's 5 at 5, brought to you, as always, by Duplicating Systems. More than a system, a solution.
Without the ones like you, who work tirelessly to keep things running, everything would suddenly stop. Hospitals, factories, schools, and power plants, they all depend on you. No matter the weather, emergency, or time of day, you're the ones who get it done. At Grainger, we're here for you, with professional-grade industrial supplies. Count on real-time product availability and fast delivery. Call, clickgrainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.